With your look at traffic, I'm Joe Cardosi.
Thank you, Joe. I'm Ian Ozan, WWL First News. Now a man who loves happy little trees, Dave Cohen on WWL AMFM.com.
Only if you put the magic white as your base. Yeah, yes. Making Bob Ross jokes all of a sudden. Thank you for inspiring that, Ian and Joe. 8 minutes after 6 a.m., I'm in for Tommy Tucker today, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I'll be joining you for Tommy's show. So glad to be with you and glad that Ian and Joe are with you. Today is Tell an Old Joke Day. So keep texting old jokes that you like to 504-260-1870 and the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, and we will read some of them. One of them, what is black and white and red all over?
A sunburned zebra.
The newspaper, but not so much anymore. Coming up after this upcoming break, we're going to talk to a journalism professor to find out what is going on and what is the future of newspapers. And just got a new report last night from the Radio, Television, Digital News Directors Association that the number of TV stations offering local news is shrinking across the country. So what's the future of newspaper and television news? We'll take a look at that, and that joke fit in perfectly. So there is that. No joke at a school board meeting in Baltimore where someone in the comments posted an X-rated video, which then showed up on the big screens in the meeting room while they were trying to have a school board meeting in Baltimore. Apparently, it froze the screens of other people attending the meeting virtually, and they then shut down the stream for the rest of the meeting because someone was showing porn during the school board meeting.
Didn't that happen in some Louisiana commission meeting during the middle of the pandemic?
The Louisiana Public Service Commission became the Louisiana Pubic Service Commission during a meeting during the pandemic, and that went on for a good 3 or 4 minutes that someone had posted to everyone watching the online stream of the Public Service Commission, and it was a big, important meeting about transmission lines, I think, and whose fault it was they went down during one of the hurricanes or something. It was a really, like, a lot of people were watching this, and someone put what was essentially a gynecological exam on everybody's screens watching this meeting. And, oh, the reactions. People were freaking out, and they were trying to shut it down, and IT was trying to figure out what to do. It was a whole big
mess. Hey, at least it froze on that specifically.
Well, the Louisiana meeting didn't freeze. It went on and on and on.
Many jokes, so little time.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Ian. We'll talk to you coming up in about 20 minutes with more news and traffic here on WWL. Well, Joe, I'll have some traffic in about 10 minutes. All right, coming up next, we'll get our journalism professor in here and take a look at the future of newspapers. Do people still on large get newspapers, and how do newspapers have a financial model that exists to keep them alive? We'll talk about that. And why are fewer and fewer television stations doing local news anymore? And it all comes down to the dollar. So we'll talk about that after this on WWL. 6:14 on your Thursday morning. I like to call it Friday Eve. And there is about a 60% chance of rain today. Some of those showers could be locally heavy, and we could get some flooding in isolated areas. So be aware of that. The good news is most of us won't even hit 90 degrees today. And after yesterday's scorching heat, that is very good news. It's National Tell an Old Joke Day. So I'm asking you all morning long to text us an old joke to 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. One person texts in and says, "Did you hear about the woman who fainted at the airport and fell onto the baggage carousel? She's slowly coming around." Ah, I see what you did there. All right, let's get serious now. Saw an article this week about the LA Times owner wants to take the newspaper public in the next year amid reports that the Times lost $50 million last year. Lost $50 million. And it got me thinking about what is the future of newspapers. Then last night, I got an email with the latest survey about local television, and the RTDNA Newhouse School at Syracuse University survey found that there are now just 695 local television stations in the nation providing any local news at all. That's down from 711 just 2 years ago. So I asked Christopher Drew to join us. He is an LSU journalism professor. Good morning, Christopher. How are you doing?
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm good, but I'm a little concerned about the future of local news, more than news in general, but really the future of news in general with this massive shrinking of audiences that we're seeing for newspapers and local news, with more and more people getting what they consider to be news from their social media feeds and alerts on their smartphones from who knows who. What is, if you were a doctor kind of analyzing the health of local news right now, how healthy is it?
It's a pretty grim situation. You can imagine, you know, when I was a kid growing up in New Orleans, we subscribed to the Times-Picayune, and my dad would come home and he would bring the States Item, the afternoon paper, with it was printed in green or orange, the covers. And even as a kid, I would grab it and devour the sports section and the comics. But today, you know, people want to be on digital. They don't want the newsprint. But it's part of a cosmic change. If you go back to late 80s, 90s, since then, newspaper circulation, including digital as well as print, has dropped by two-thirds. The number of journalists in the country, local journalists, has dropped by 75%. A third of the counties in the U.S. really don't have any full-time journalists, and another third have fewer than 10 journalists in the whole county.
Wow. Subscriptions are down two-thirds, and that includes people who view the newspaper's content online. And the number of local
exactly.
journalists at any level down by 75%.
75%, and that's just since about 2000. Think about, you know, what we faced in the journalism industry, and listeners can think about how their own habits have changed. But just since 2000, since the late mid-90s, we've had the internet come in. We've had smartphones. We've had social media. Now we have AI. Google and Facebook have been getting all the ad revenue that used to go to newspapers, either in print or even on digital, because people search for stories or search for topics, and the ad revenue goes to Google and Facebook. And now with AI, the AI searches basically don't bring any traffic to the newspaper websites. They just scoop up the answers and give them to people.
Yeah, we've been actually talking about that here. That's a real concern now with, let's just take Google as the primary example, the largest search engine. Folks now can ask Google's AI anything, and the accuracy may or may not be there, and they are very open about that. But most people now, they're not going to click a link to go read an actual story in an actual website. They're just going to read what AI tells them is the answer to their question about whatever the news topic is that they're curious about. And that's scary
exactly.
because if people don't click through to websites and the websites don't get page views, then the websites don't make money. And if they don't make money, at some point, can they continue to operate?
Right. No, they can't. And you know, we've lost so many reporters. You know, we've lost so many areas, don't even cover the school board meetings, you know, barely cover the local governments for people to know what to do. I mean, there's a lot of sports heavy coverage because that's where readers are. Readers, younger readers go to TikTok for news, and influencers and you know, on Facebook. You know, we all know it's a mess. I mean, the society is so fragmented, and with all the partisanship, studies show people go seek out opinions that are their own. So in terms of trying to get to some common sense of community and some facts we could agree on, which was kind of the role of journalism for so many decades, It's a very difficult situation.
We're talking with LSU journalism professor Christopher Drew. When we come back, I'll ask him, all right, if the picture is bleak and these numbers are showing dwindling consumption of local news, dwindling numbers of people producing local news, what does the future look like? How much time do newspapers and local television news have to continue to operate in any way, shape, or form? And how has the huge number of stations now owned and newspapers now owned by singular companies? There's just a few companies that seem to own everything now influence that, with it seeming that the focus is more on profits and making shareholders happy than actually providing news coverage. We'll continue the conversation after this check on WWL Traffic. 16 more TV stations stopped doing any local news in the U.S. over the last 2 years. We just reported that the L.A. Times lost $50 million just last year. Overall, newspapers have lost two-thirds of their consumption, whether you're holding a paper or reading it digitally on a device. And the number of journalists in America has dropped by 75%. Christopher Drew, an LSU journalism professor who studies these things, is joining us this morning here on WWL. And Professor, what does the future look like of local news, given what you're telling us?
Well, by maybe not by choice, but the news industry is becoming more and more focused on nonprofit operations just trying to break even. I mean, people in New Orleans, Baton Rouge, around Lafayette, Shreveport, we're lucky in a sense. The Times-Picayune, the Advocate, John George's only demands that they break even. He's not trying to make a profit. So compared to a lot of local papers out there, we still have pretty good coverage in New Orleans, Baton Rouge, and the other cities.
As far as we know, are they breaking even?
Yes. Well, he insists on it, and so they can only expand a certain amount, but I think they still have 50, 60 journalists in New Orleans, which is a great number for a lot of metro areas. And they've been very successful at the Advocate, reaching out to big foundations to supplement the money that they have to operate with and to do investigative reporting. So in other areas, I mean, there are newspaper chains that have been bought up by hedge funds, and they just slash, slash, slash to where there's hardly anybody in the newsroom. And some of the news is sent in from other states and regional headquarters. And, you know, you can barely find anybody to talk to at the news outlet. So we're fortunate here. We have the Louisiana Illuminator covering state government in Baton Rouge, a nonprofit that's largely run by former Times-Picayune political.
So over the next generation, will we still have any kind of newspapers and local TV, do you think, 20, 25 years
down
the road? Well,
we'll keep shifting to digital. I mean, I think we'll still have some local TV. It's like the national TV, you know. We had the three broadcast networks and nothing else, and then cable came in, and we have CNN, Fox, and MSNBC. The audiences fragment. I think we'll still have local news, but, you know, local news, TV news has always been kind of a bare bones, too heavily crime-focused, you know, simple kind of thing. I think it's going to have to evolve if it wants to compete for readers and viewers.
How much has the conglomeration of these big companies owning all of the local TV stations, owning the newspapers, owning the radio stations as well, impacted all of this?
Well, it's hurt. And, you know, some of them are just kind of out to strip operations down in terms of people and make more money. And the problem is, once you strip down the number of reporters, editors, whatnot, then your product has less to offer people as well, and you could get into this vicious downhill cycle. But, you know, when people have so many other options on their phone, they can watch movies, live sports, whatever, there's such a competition for people's attention. That's all contributed to the decline in the interest in news.
Professor Drew, we appreciate your joining us here on WWL and at least shedding some light on this. I don't know that the future is very bright, but at least we have an idea of what's to come. And unfortunately, so many people rely on their social media feeds to provide them what they think is news, but it really is not vetted and investigated and what news used to be. We appreciate you joining us here on WWL. I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. Coming up next, Commissioner Mike Strain joins us. We'll talk about what this means that Japan is opening things up to more trade for U.S. grown goods, and why are beef prices the highest ever and still climbing? We'll talk about that after the news on WWL.
With your look at traffic, I'm Joe Cardosi.
Thank you, Joe. I'm Ian Ozan, WWL First News. Now back to Dave Cohen on WWL AMFM and .com.
Want to hear a dirty joke?
Yeah.
A white horse fell in the mud.
Boom!
It is National Tell an Old Joke Day, and throughout the morning, if folks text them to 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line, I will tell some old jokes. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker. No joke here. I lost my place. That's not a joke either. All right. There's now a website where people can go rate their homeowners associations.
Really? Do we need to rate a homeowners association?
Does anyone like their HOA? Is there an HOA anywhere that people go, God, I love this HOA. I feel like I get the value of my money for what I pay, and they're doing great things with it and making our neighborhood a wonderful place?
Is it at least like Hot or Not, where it just shows them and you can be like, thumbs down. That's a 10.
A tender for HOAs?
I will never pay an HOA fee. I will never be a member of an HOA. I don't like the idea of HOAs. I see in theory how they could be good, but it seems to always go horribly wrong.
We're in a condo complex, so we kind of have to pay the HOA dues in our rent.
Yeah, if you choose to live there, you got to pay it.
And for the services we get, I understand why, and it does take care of some of the stuff I really wouldn't want to do. When I had my house, though, I was happy I was far away from people and didn't have to worry about that.
Ever pay an HOA fee, Joe?
No, yeah. No. I think a bunch of my neighbors probably would like that, but no.
Because of you.
Specifically me being shirtless in the yard.
Yeah, so they could send you fines and fees for violating rules, right? No, mostly what I hear, and I guess you only hear, you tend to hear the bad, not the good about anything, but mostly what I hear is, you know, about the Karens and the HOA going around and finding people for silly little things like the trim on their windows not matching the color pattern that's approved by the HOA, or flying a flag where you're not supposed to do it, or just silly violations. But I guess some people must like them, and I guess the Karens of the world must love the HOAs.
It depends, and it all depends on what kind of administration you have. On the flip side of that, you have some HOAs, my dad lives in one of these, where they do absolutely nothing, and he essentially had to force a hostile takeover to make sure any yard work got done, that the ponds were cleaned, and that the HOA did its job.
All right, well, HOA Doctor is the name of the new website where folks can go on and rate their HOAs. Probably be some interesting reading. Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Joe. Each of you think of another old joke, and I'll have you tell it when we come back after the news at 7:30. Here on after 7 News at 7 o'clock, here on WWL, because it's National Tell an Old Joke Day. I'll read some more of your texts coming up. Oh, and we've got Mike Strain, the Ag Commissioner, coming in here next. We're going to talk about a variety of topics with Mike, including Coke and confirming they are going to real sugar in at least some of their soft drinks. We'll also talk about what it means the Japanese is opening up markets for the first time ever to a lot of ag products, maybe from Louisiana. And we'll talk about a variety of other topics here on WWL. It's National Tell an Old Joke Day. One person texts in and says, what gets wetter and wetter the more it dries? A towel. Well, we're going to be getting wetter and wetter today and tomorrow with this system passing by, dumping all kinds of rain on us. The good news is it's going to keep the heat at bay. We may not even hit 90 degrees the next 2 days. And to me, that is good news. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker. Joining us now, Mike Strain, the Commissioner of Agriculture and Forestry for the great state of Louisiana. Morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
I am fantastic. It's not even 80 degrees right now. The last couple of mornings, we've already had a heat index over 100 by this time.
I know. Look, we've been having to be very, very careful out there in the heat. And this is good for crops. You know, when we get up there, you know, with the average temperature in that, you know, 80 to 90, when it gets up over 100, it can really have a negative impact on our crops. And it depends on, you know, when it is, and mostly it's about what the temperature is at night, whether or not it cools off at night. That affects fertilization and also the development of the actual crop itself. So if it's too hot, you know, what we have with the rice doesn't want to, you know, fertilize, you know, so that it affects fertilization. But then for the soybeans, you'll have beautiful plants, beautiful pods, and no beans. And no. So it can have a major effect. One of the things, though, we are seeing right now is an uptick in mosquitoes and virus in mosquitoes all over the state. And so everyone needs to be very, very careful. We've seen some cases in North Louisiana. They're finding St. Louis encephalitis, you know, there. But also we've seen, you know, West Nile virus. And, you know, can't forget, you know, the Eastern and Western encephalitis. So we have to be careful right now. Everyone needs to just do what they need to do. you know, and all the precautions to keep from getting bitten by mosquitoes, because we don't vaccinate people. We vaccinate our horses. We don't vaccinate our people. So it's by non-exposure. So mosquitoes are a problem right now.
Yeah, wear that DEET and cover those arms and legs, and especially at dusk and dawn, be careful out there. I was just yesterday, my wife and I were driving through the middle of Tangipahoa Parish and passed a cornfield, and all of the corn looked like it was literally burnt. I said, that's going to be popcorn soon. There wasn't a bit of green on any of the stalks or the ears or anything. And I thought, man, that poor farmer.
Yep. But we're going to get some beautiful rain. That will help. That will help because, you know, and as everything is moving forward, the other thing that's moving forward is all of these trade deals from, you know, across the world. And we've really been pushing to get these trade deals put in place really before August 15th. Because why? Because now is the time when the farmers are selling their crops on the market. The farmers contract, you know, their crops forward depending on what they look like, you know, and how the plants look and what the estimated yields are. But they don't wait until the crop is being harvested to sell the crop. They begin selling it, you know, after what right up front, you know, once, you know, the plants break through the ground and everything looks good, they may go ahead and contract for maybe up to 25%, then midway through another 50%, and just maybe a little bit, you know, there at harvest. So we need to, you know, make sure that our commodity prices are where they need to be prior to harvest. And a lot of that is tied up in, you know, really two things. One, trade, and then the other is the value of the dollar against the foreign currencies. Well, and so, you know, things are moving in a positive direction, but we're not exactly where we need to be yet. But we're excited about these trade deals.
Well, yeah. Speaking of those trade deals, this week, President Trump announced a trade deal with Japan and opening up, and that's
huge.
A huge, huge
right.
market. How
and
big a deal is that going to be for Louisiana, and are there products that Louisiana is going to be able to now sell in Japan that our local farmers have not been able to ship over there in the past?
Rice. Number one, rice. Rice. You know, before, it was so restrictive in Japan with imported rice. Literally, if you went over there and you had rice, you know, for, you know, just to demonstrate and, you know, and those sample packets to give away, that was a criminal offense. You'd be arrested for that because they were so tight in controlling it. But the price of rice has doubled in Japan in the past year. And you see that there's been a shift now in the political sense there in Japan. You know, the current party lost the upper house, big shift, because one, they're tired of inflation and they're tired of the price of rice being so high. So this deal will open up the markets for Louisiana rice. But now we sell a lot of soybeans into Japan. If you look at the company Zeno Grain, which is a headquarter, U.S. headquarters is in Mandeville, Louisiana, is the largest grain cooperative in the world, and it's Japanese owned. And they buy United States and Louisiana products and have a huge export facility on the Mississippi River. So, you know, so more and for beef, a market for American beef, soybeans, corn to some extent, but rice is a big, big deal.
All right. So good news. The new trade deal with Japan could be good news for Louisiana farmers and Louisiana's economy. When we come back with Commissioner Strain, I want to talk more about beef, as the feds now say ground beef is more expensive than it's ever been, and it keeps climbing. What does the future look like for beef? Are we going to have to take out a loan to buy a steak? We'll ask Mike that after we check on WWL traffic. We do have that delay about a mile of backup as you head from LaPlace to Kenner on the I-10 over the Bonnie Carey Spillway. Someone texted in that it's a broken down vehicle at mile marker 216. Hopefully that is pretty easy to clear pretty quickly. So you'll have to decide, do you want to stick with the Spillway or go to Airline? But hopefully they clear it quickly. We're talking with Louisiana Ag Commissioner Mike Strain. Commissioner, the feds came out with their government data about the average price of a pound of ground beef. Back in May, it was $5.50. Now it's nearly a dollar higher at almost $6.50 for a pound of ground beef. Do you see an end in sight to the highest ever prices for beef continuing to climb?
No, sir, I don't. In the last few days, yesterday, we set new records for price of cattle. If you look at on the hoof going into the feedlots, $3.31 a pound. Coming out of the feedlots across the back, live weight, $2.27. And so when you look at that, and by the, you know, by the time you get that animal, you know, processed, just, you know, in other words, butchered, there's $4 a pound in that particular animal right there. And of course, that is bone in, and that's, you know, just across the back. And then, so if you look at what it takes to make ground meat, you're probably looking at over $6 a pound cost for ground meat right now. That's
wow.
cost.
That's the cost just to produce it.
And yeah, if you do the math, $6.50, that ground meat is being sold at just a little above cost at the grocery store, if at all. It may be a lost leader to get people into the store, because that's what it costs. We have the lowest cattle numbers that we have had since 1951, and they're continuing to decline. So, you know, the average beef herd in the United States is about 20 head of cattle. And what happens is that the farmers are aging out, and we have less and less farmers with less and less cattle. We've been able to keep up with demand by having better productivity per animal, heavier weights, more efficient productivity. But now, you know, we simply have less animals. Also, to exacerbate that is the issue of the New World screwworm problem in Mexico, where we're cutting off the importation of Mexican beef because we have found that screwworm within 300 miles of our southern border. And that is a huge problem. It will be a multi-billion dollar problem if that screwworm gets into the United States. And it doesn't necessarily just affect cattle. It affects all, you know, living creatures, and it is a fly, and we are fighting it desperately, but we're having to keep that Mexican beef out right now. So you're looking at cattle, normally a five-year cycle, but the cycle has somewhat decoupled from the normal cycle because we have just lower numbers, and it's so very expensive to go into the cattle business. So I think these lower numbers are going to be here. If the price of beef keeps going up, though, people will buy less, and that will bring the price down some. But the bottom line, lower numbers, less farms, less cows, and higher input costs.
Steak went up 12%, the cost, just last month. Thank you, Commissioner. I know there's other things we want to talk about. Next week, we'll catch you and get caught up on this UK trade mission and find out how that affects things here in Louisiana. Good to talk to you.